This is a WSMI podcast. Our guest
today is
Steve March Torme.
Steve March Torme is the son of two famous dads, Hal March, who many of you remember as the host of the $64,000 question, but there was so much more in his repertoire than that, and also the son of Mel Torme. Mel Torme, a musical prodigy at the age of three, and certainly a singer of the Great American Songbook. And son, Steve March Torme, has pretty much carried that legacy forward. Steve, thanks for joining us today here on WSMI.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. And, you know, most people don't know that, you know, Mel and Hal got together and had a little son named Steve. You know, who knew?
Who knew is
who
right.
Who knew?
I think the first thing that I wanted to ask you, and I've thought about this since, oh, we first talked months ago about doing this, is how on earth does a person like you, who works so hard with your music, how do you fit the touring, the studio work, your family, and the marketing of yourself with doing a daily radio show in Green Bay, Wisconsin?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I guess the obvious answer would be practice, but you know, you really do have to kind of schedule things. Now, you know, as far as the radio show is concerned, yeah, I'm on a radio show. I do two radio shows. Actually three now. I'm on 5 days a week here in Wisconsin. We do a show that now is going to be, we're going to be broadcasting out of Appleton, but I do that show a week in advance.
Okay.
So, you know, there's no way in the world I can be at a radio station 5 days a week and have a musical career. So what I do is they give me the logs to all, you know, the songs, and I'm allowed to write whatever I want as long as I don't get us sued. That's what I was told in the very beginning. I said, what are my rules? Because don't get us sued. I said, okay, I can bend the envelope without getting us in too much trouble. So I write whatever I want about the songs, and whether they are stories or backstories or where's this group going to be performing next week, and if it's a town that people haven't heard of, I'll say, well, they're going to be playing in, you know, Genesee, Iowa, birthplace of, and then I'll give them some information on somebody we didn't know was born there. So I'm allowed pretty free rein, but I do it a week in advance so that I do have time to go, you know, tour and do what I need to do. For instance, since I leave this Saturday, I'll be gone for about 8 days, I had to do 2 weeks of shows. So that's kind of a long answer to how I can do the radio show. I also do a show called Music of Your Life, a network that's been around forever that I think Pat Boone started a long time ago. And the same thing, I do 4 hours a week on that, so I do it in advance. And then on Monday mornings, I call in to the sister station, to the one here in Wisconsin, and it's in Lake Havasu, Arizona. And Monday mornings is called Monday Mornings with March Torme, and I do about a 35-minute sports show. So it's, you know, and I can do that from the road. I can call in on my cell phone and do that live. So that's how I kind of balance that. As far as my family's concerned, I do the very best I can to be here and be with my children and my wife and provide some comedy relief in their lives. And when I get an opportunity to, I will take them on the road with me. That's just very hard to do because I've got two little girls in school, so I can't really pull them out and bring them on the road. And I don't, you know, a lot of places I'm going to go to, they're going to be bored anyway. So, you know, if we get some interesting gigs out of town, I'll be able to take them with me.
Now,
so it's not as hard as it sounds because I do have the luxury of doing stuff pre-recording a week in advance on the radio.
That certainly helps. Now, speaking of interesting...
Yep.
Interesting tours. You've got what you call your Midwest mini tour coming up. Now you perform
right.
Everywhere from California to New York City, and you found time to squeeze in Hannibal, Missouri, which I'm thrilled with because it's not all that far away from us. It's a lovely town. And how did you wind up putting together this particular show?
Well, you know, there's a convention in New York every year called APAP. And it's where performers go to be seen in front of, you know, hundreds of bookers of venues and theaters, as opposed to, you know, going to that theater and maybe, you know, three people see you that are from other venues. That's the reason they do these conventions, obviously, is to get musical and theatrical acts in front of as many agents and bookers as possible in one, you know, short amount of time. So anyway, I did APAP about 3 years ago, and one of the agents that was there gave me his card, and he said, you know, we're with Allied Concert Series, And we talked, and as it turns out, they are out of Minnesota, Plymouth, Minnesota, which I didn't know where that was. And they said, why don't you come and showcase for us? And that's really how that happened. One of my buddies here, who's a great jazz pianist, we drove from Appleton to Plymouth, I guess about a 6.5-hour drive, and did a showcase for them. And they came back and said, well, one of the places it wants to see you is in Hannibal, Missouri. And that's exactly how this little mini tour was brought about. So
Hannibal.
We get in a van on Saturday morning, and we will be driving long distances. You know, four guys, and this particular trio, we have not worked together before. So I sure hope we like each other, because we're spending a lot of close quarters in one vehicle, but it'll be fine.
It will be great. And Hannibal is a great town. Hannibal LaGrange has got a lovely auditorium there, and you'll just love the performance.
Yeah,
and the people will be appreciative too. One of the things that I wanted to mention about your music is obviously the legacy that you found yourself growing into comes from a tremendously cool jazz type of music and a combination of that with the Great American Songbook, and yet with the work that you've done for example, the fact that you sat there and did Name That Tune for 3 years, and we haven't even talked mm-hmm. about that yet. How you've done virtually every style of music there possibly could be. How do you work that all together?
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up. Most of the people who have seen me perform know me as, oh yeah, Mel Torme. Yeah, he's kind of a jazz pop singer. And for the most part, that is true. Most of the shows that I've done are somewhat more jazz-oriented than they would be. You know, obviously, I'm not a heavy metal performer. I'm not a country artist. I'm not a hip-hop artist. My stuff does come from a lot of the Great American Songbook, but also I write a lot, and there's a number of original tunes in my shows. But what I decided to do, and it starts on March 3rd, the very first concert I'm going to be doing like this, you know, you mentioned something about Mel. One of the things that was really interesting about seeing his concerts, besides his musicality, and I do it to an extent, is he would often, you know, tell people stories about the songs, which I think just makes them for a more interesting concert. You know, you can stand there and sing 15 songs in a row and not say much in between and say, "All right, ladies and gentlemen, here's a Jerome Kern song." But I do remember that, you know, my dad loved communicating with the audience, and, you know, he would do a song and say, okay, this was written by Harold Arlen, but here's the interesting thing. It, you know, 1923 or 1934, it was supposed to go to Bing Crosby, but he was under contract to RKO, and they couldn't do it, so it ended up over here, and somehow he weaves a story in about that particular song. So you're actually getting a history of the music you're hearing along with the performance, and I decided to start doing a show, like I said, that I'm going to do on March 3rd called Uncovered. And again, most of the people that have seen me perform, they see me out in front with a microphone, but I've been playing guitar and piano for a long time, and I wanted to do a show that I could do the same kind of thing with, where I would talk about the artists and the songwriters that I grew up on, because, you know, as much as I'm connected with my dad from people that don't really know me, I didn't grow up at the knee of Benny Goodman and Count Basie and Duke Ellington. I'm influenced by, excuse me, Joni Mitchell and James Taylor and Hall & Oates and the Doobie Brothers and, you know, people like that, Crosby, Stills, and Nash. So I'm going to be doing a show starting in March that's called Uncovered, and it's 21 songs from all these different songwriters. But I wanted to find stuff that people haven't been beaten to death with. I mean, I've got a Stevie Wonder tune in there. I don't want to get on a stage and sing You Are the Sunshine of My Life. It's, you know, I get it, but I don't want to do a real obvious show where people go, really? We're going to hear that for the billionth time? So, for instance, the Stevie Wonder tune is a tune called Overjoyed.
My favorite Stevie Wonder song of all time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a great song, but people have not been beaten over the head with it. They're going to hear that and say, oh, yeah, I love that tune. I haven't heard that in a while. I'm doing a Rascals tune called How Can I Be Sure? Well, people will hear and go, oh, yeah, I know that song. You know, how can I be sure in a world that's constantly changing? And they'll know that tune. So that's basically what this show is going to be about. And I have a couple of musicians I work with here that we can actually sit down and do, you know, Crosby, Stills, and Nash's Sweet Judy, Blue Eyes in perfect three-part harmony and really do a really interesting show of all these diverse tunes that really do come from my era, which is that, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s pop writing. So, and I get a chance to actually sit down and go, yeah, I can really play piano, I can really play guitar, and it'll just, you know, it's a little self-indulgent, but it's a really fun musical show. And I'm not using a drummer, I'm using a percussionist, so that I want people to really be able to hear the inside of these songs.
Our guest is Steve March Torme, who's going to be in Hannibal, Missouri at Hannibal LaGrange University next Thursday night, November 17th. Concert starts what time? Do you remember, Steve?
You know what? I have to check. I'm going to guess 7:30 because that's usually when these start, but I can actually give you an actual starting time here. Let me look at my itinerary. Yeah, we're doing this live, ladies and gentlemen.
7:30, 8 o'clock, yeah, somewhere in there.
Yeah, let's take a look. It is a 7:30 show, you're absolutely right.
Okay, should be, and it should be fun. I know they're, it's selling well, but I know there's some tickets left, so you should call over there. And later on, finish up here, I'll put the number out for folks who'd like to call and get tickets. One of the things that I wanted to mention...
What sites should I see there? Is there something I should see while I'm in town?
Oh, my goodness. Well, remember, Hannibal is most definitely the home of Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens.
Right.
That's where he wrote Huck, you know, that's the setting for Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer. The the whitewashed fence is there. Aunt Polly's house is there. It's all there. Mm-hmm. Injun Joe's cave. It's all there.
That's good enough right there.
You
that's
got
really
it.
Perfect.
The road to here has been so incredibly diverse. We even have a Litchfield connection. Obviously, you worked with two of our hometown boys, Rex and Robbie Robinson, years ago. Those guys worked with you and, you know, obviously with Liza Minnelli. And Robbie, I understand, is just about the god of all musical arrangers in Hollywood and L.A. these days.
Well, you know, he is a really, really good musician, and he has been in my corner for years. And he has been Frankie Valli's musical director now for about 206 years.
Yeah.
you know, I mean, he's been with him literally since almost after Robbie and I worked together. Frankie snatched him up, and he's been with him ever since. And just... a really sweet guy, but also as an arranger, you know, great ears for turning things a little bit on their side. And those are the kind of people I like to work with. It's what attracted me to working with him and Rex in the first place. I have, and people will hear this in Hannibal, my piano player is a close friend, and he's a terrific arranger. His name is Steve Rollins. And he does a lot of what Robbie does, too. Steve works a lot in Los Angeles. He gets asked to do lots of arrangements for vocal arranging and for orchestra. And I just like things a little different. And people will hear that in Hannibal. You know, we will do songs that people are familiar with, that hopefully have become favorites of theirs. But we don't do stock arrangements. I would get bored way too quickly. So we will take a song, and we won't make it so different that people don't recognize it. I don't want anybody, you know, coming to a concert and saying, I don't know what he was doing. I mean, he said that was, you know, Stardust. It didn't sound like Stardust to me. We won't do that. But we will take, a couple of left-hand turns and substitute chords where you can hear it, and you kind of get that RCA Victor dog with the head to the side thing. Like, oh, well, that was, I didn't expect that, but it worked. And that's the great joy of working with a really good arranger where I can say, hey, let's take that F sharp, you know, minor and change it a little bit, make it a sus chord. And all of a sudden, you hear, you know, the same song, but in a little different way, in a fresher way than you've heard a million times. Steve and I are doing a couple of symphony shows. We have one coming up in Wisconsin here on December 10th. And it's a holiday Christmas, you know, it's a holiday show with all those kinds of songs. But he and I sat down and really worked on the arrangements. He did all the grunt work. He did the dirty work. And I did, you know, more suggesting. But they're absolutely beautiful passages, and you know, we've heard all these songs. You've heard Winter Wonderland and, you know, Most Wonderful Time of the Year and the Christmas song by my dad, but with a little bit of a different flair. And what's really neat about this show is for the very first time, my daughter is going to sing in it with me.
Oh.
I have a 12-year-old named Ruby who's really good. She can sing. So she's got it in the genes. I'm not even going to say it's from me. I'll just say it's from her grandpa. But she can sing. I'm going to bring her up on stage to do some background singing on Charles Brown's Please Come Home for Christmas. And then when we do this show Uncovered in March, she's going to be singing on Joni Mitchell's Big Yellow Taxi. And she's going to be singing lead on that.
Oh,
so,
that's cool.
You know, that's going to be it's going to be really cool for me to see my 12-year-old up there. I'm going to do the best I can not to look at her because I will lose. I'll just, you know... I'm just going to face the audience and know she's behind me. There you go.
You know, you bring up, just mentioning that brings me to my next question. And by the way, it is so great to talk to someone, to talk to a famous person from a famous family, and they're just normal. And isn't that wonderful? Because you had two famous dads.
There were people that would bicker with you.
Here's
my wife on the phone.
Here's Steve March Torme, who has two famous dads, a beautiful mother who was a model, and yet you grew up with most kids just like around here, except the kids you grew up with had famous last names in Beverly Hills. But how was it essentially different? Is not a kid
well,
anywhere he is?
They are, and you know what? I have to tell you something, and I get asked that question a lot. Hopefully, no one's ever met me and said, gee, you know, he's a good singer, but, you know, what a jerk, and he thinks he's all this. I would never, ever, ever want to hear that. I am a regular guy. I started out as a jock. I still play, you know, in two USTA, you know, tennis leagues. That's my first thing was always to be, you know, one of the guys, and a lot of that is really attributed to my stepfather. And that's no fault to Mel's. I just didn't live with my real dad after the age of three. So we weren't around each other that much until a little bit later on in his life. My stepfather, Hal, was a disciplinarian, and he instilled, you know, some really good values in us. I mean, just basically, you know, be a good guy. Do unto others. Be tolerant. Don't be a wise guy. And I think it really helped me because there are people that went off the rails. Where I came from, I did grow up amongst a lot of Beverly Hills kids who were second generation of performers. A lot of them, Carrie Fisher. I went to school with Carrie Fisher. I went to school with Lorraine Newman from Saturday Night Live. I went to school with Desi Arnaz Jr. with Dean Martin. You know, Dino. A lot of people, and it's easy to fall into the trappings of here we are in Beverly Hills, and our friends are, you know, people you read about in People magazine and get caught up in it. And, you know, I was hardly perfect, but I think because of how grounded my home life was, you know, if I didn't toe the line and do my homework and do what I was supposed to do, I wasn't running around being crazy. And I do have both my parents to thank for that, you know, my mom and my stepfather. And I'm sure Mel would have done a great job too. I got lucky that I had a, you know, pretty grounded background, and you're right, kids are kids where they are. You know, you do some good stuff and you get in trouble sometimes and you go play sports and you fall in love and you get your heart broken like everybody else. But it is a unique place to grow up. I get asked, you know, what was it like being Mel Torme's son, all these musicians you must have been around? And I say, well, that would be so if I'd grown up with them, but I didn't. I grew up around Hal March's friends and they were all comedians. So our dinner parties when I was a little boy growing up, the people that were in our house every weekend were Lucille Ball and Jan Murray and Jack Carter and Buddy Hackett and Milton Berle. That's who I grew up around, which is great. I mean, we just had a lot of laughter in our house and a lot of words that I didn't know existed when I was 12 years old. Like, oh, I think I heard that on the playground, but they're laughing at it. It's pretty cool.
Lucky guy. Yeah, that is fascinating. The interesting thing, the other side of your life, the tennis part, I mean, you were even a gold medal winner, you know, in fast pitch softball, as I understand.
Yeah, my first love was baseball. When I was a little boy, I, you know, like a million other kids, I wanted to play professional baseball, and I was in New York, so I was listening to the Yankees. And again, like a billion other kids, Mickey Mantle was my hero. I actually got to meet him once through Hal in New York City. And I would listen to the Yankee games in the morning down in our basement. And when they were done, that's when I started listening to AM radio and started singing along and realizing, oh, I like this. And I continued to play baseball and then finally into fast pitch softball. And I got lucky. I tried out for this Maccabiah team. And for your listeners who don't know what that is, the Maccabiah, or it's actually pronounced Maccabiah games, are held every 4 years in Tel Aviv. It's the best Jewish athletes from all over the world. And I think we had about 5,400 athletes in the two games I played in. That's a great punchline. People say, oh, yeah, the book of great Jewish athletes is 3 pages long. But the truth is, there have been some very noted athletes that played in those games. Mark Spitz won gold medals in the Maccabiah games. Brad Gilbert, the tennis player. Danny Shays, Dolph Shays' kid who played in the NBA for 10 years. So there were some very good athletes. And I got lucky enough. I tried out, and I made a team. And 4 years later, I tried out again. I made the team again. So I lived out a Walter Mitty-ish existence by making these teams a little bit later than you usually would as an athlete, age-wise. And I'm only sorry that my stepfather was not alive to see it, because he really taught me how to play baseball. I mean, I just pestered him. And, come on, let's play some more. And he'd stay out there until it was dark hitting me ground balls. So I got lucky. I got a chance to, play for a national team twice. I mean, I never expected to go beyond, you play in your league and you have a beer afterwards and you go home. And I got to actually travel to Israel with a USA on my blazer and win 2 gold medals. So I'm just very fortunate.
Steve March-Torme is our guest. Had a fascinating life, and he's going to be sharing part of it with us in Hannibal LaGrange University over in Hannibal, Missouri, next Thursday night, November 17th. Starts at 7:30. Yep. And, Steve, this has been it's been a joy for me to get a chance to talk to you and share my appreciation for your music and just your overall terrific personality with my listeners here on WSMI.
You are very kind. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the show. And again, afterwards, if people want to hang out afterwards, I will have CDs there. But if they just want to come up and talk, I'm open for anything. That's half the fun of this is, I don't go do shows and then, go to my hotel room and sit there and watch TV. I like hanging out with people, so it'll be a good time.
Steve March-Torme, it's been fabulous. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for taking the time.